We are on Shar Beis, Perek Tazayin. And again, now he's already, I think he's already told us his basic hashkafa and tefillah. I was summarizing it for someone, and the idea basically being that, if I had to summarize the connection between Perek Aleph, Shar Aleph and Shar Beis, the first gate and the second, I think that you would say is that in Shar Aleph, he has already established for us how we are Elohim. We are powerful in the world. We are actually a sort of God in the world in the sense that we control how much Hashpa comes into the world. Hashem says that, Elohim is that Koach of Hashem, which controls the world. And we, by bringing Kedusha and raising up our neshama and raising up the Kedusha, adding until that Kedusha goes all the way up into the worlds and brings Kedusha to the world, we are adding Hashpa. And in Shar Beis, he adds that we're actually giving a bracha to Hashem. Right? When we say Baruch Atah, we're not Shevach, we're not praising God, hey, you're blessed. That's not what we're doing. We're giving Hashem a bracha, which the obvious problem with that is, how do you give Hashem a bracha? He's the one that gives us brachas usually. How is it possible? How is it possible for us to give Hashem a bracha? Baruch at Hashem. It's one thing, you go to Reb Chaim Kanievsky and you get a bracha. So now he'll give you more children, more parnasa, more all these things. But how are you giving a bracha to Hashem? And that's what he's masbir here, is that Hashem created the world in a way that in order for him to be mashpia in every specific area, he needs us to unleash that force. And therefore, by us connecting to Hashem in tefillah, we're saying, Baruch Ata, you should be blessed, Hashem, in the sense that now you should be able to give. I'm coming. You should be able, in the sense that you should be able to now continue being mashpia onto the world in these different ways. Okay? And that's why, really, in the end, ultimately, what you're doing in tefillah is you're really, quote unquote, empowering Hashem to now give to the world. And now everyone in the world will gain. Obviously, the person who made the tefillah will gain too, because he was the one that brought it into the world. But that's the way it goes. In Perek Tazayin now, he gets much more, a little bit technical, but I'll explain it as best as I can, as best as I understand it. And we'll have to probably take another night on it.
If we didn't do this brachot,
that's what this guy asked me also this morning. Interesting. He asked me, so are you saying that if no one would pray, there would be no hashpa from Hashem? And the answer is 100% I'm saying that. That if we would not unleash that force of Hashem, then there wouldn't be. Hashem set up, Hashem can't do it. Of course Hashem could do it. But Hashem chose to set up the world that way because he wants us to be B'Tzelem Elokim. He wants us to be partners with him in creating the world. That's the partnership. We are here to bring out that force. Now, what's my proof to that? It's open Rashi in Chumash. What's the Rashi in Chumash? It says here, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on the third day, this is amazing Rashi, you know what I'm saying? Yes. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on the third day of creation, created grass. But then on the sixth day, it says, V'chol siach ha-sadeh, terem yiyah ba'aretz, v'chol esev ha-sadeh, terem yitzmach. Right? He says that really the grass didn't grow. Because there was no rain and there was no people. So Rashi asks, I don't understand. So Hashem created grass on the third day, but then you're telling me it didn't grow till the sixth? What's going on? So Rashi says the grass was created right beneath the surface of the ground, but it needed rain for it to come out. And it did not rain until the sixth day. What happened on the sixth day? Why would it rain on the sixth day?
Because wasn't Adam supposed to work the land, and that's only Hashem didn't didn't allow the grass to grow until there was a farmer to make sure that it's kept up, kind of.
No, so Rashi doesn't say that.
No?
Rashi says that...
At the pray for rain.
That, correct. Rashi says is that the reason why it couldn't rain between the third and the sixth day is because no one was davening. Because there's no people. So Hashem created the grass on the third day, but now it needs rain. Okay, but you can't bring rain because Hashem already created the world with the system that in order for the grass to grow, there needs to be tefillah. So therefore he says that between the third and the sixth day, there was no rain because there was Adam was not created yet to pray. That means you see from here that it's not the pshat that, you know, you daven to give you rain. The whole system is set up that we want to hear your tefillah. And if you hear your tefillah, then the rain will come. So that's what Mamasher Ashi says. He says, "V'ein makir b'tevasan shel gesham u'kishebo adam v'yada shehim tzarech lo'ilam hispalel amalehim." And then it started to rain. It's open Rashi, practically.
I would have used the Adam case as the exact opposite. He had no mitzvot. Everything was given to him on a silver platter. He really didn't have to like make a parnasa and stress out and have to really pray to Hashem for that parnasa. So, but everything was functioning beautifully without it, without, you know.
No, Rashi says not like that. Rashi says that the way he got it is by praying for rain. So he prayed for the rain, and therefore the rain could come. Now, his avodas Hashem was with a level of clarity, right? I mean, if he was created by God, then he probably, you know, he didn't have too much doubt of he understood his role. He made a mistake in the chait, but he understood his role. So therefore, he understood that he was supposed to pray, and that would bring out the rain. And therefore, Hashem held back the rain until that prayer was said by Avraham Avinu. So it's pretty incredible thought by Rashi there. Okay, now in Parak Tezayin, the Nefesh HaChaim now goes into a little bit more technical part, and he says that if you remember all the way back in Shar Aleph, we mentioned that there's three parts to a person's neshama. There's the nefesh, ruach, neshama, niran, right? Nefesh, ruach, neshama. Nefesh is the part of the neshama that's already inside the guf. Remember, the concept being that the neshama really stretching out from Shemayim, where there's actually one piece of klalius, nafshay sisrael. There's one piece of nefesh. And then from that piece, Hashem stretches, doesn't cut off, because that's karis, chas v'shalom. Doesn't cut anything off. He's stretching out from that piece of neshama a piece. It goes into the person and then fills up the person's guf. And there's three parts of that neshama. The real neshama, the tahor part, is hovering around his guf. It's not inside the guf. There's the part which is the transition into the guf. And then there's the guf itself. We gave the glass blower mashal, right? That the person is blowing through a tube into the glass. So, you know, first the air is in the person, then it goes into the tube, then it goes into the glass. So nefesh, ruach, neshama, the nefesh is already, once it's already physicalized inside the person, the ruach is when it's in between. It's like when it's in the pipe. So it's kind of the transition. And then the neshama is when it's completely still whole, not inside the guf. So you're supposed to use all three parts of your neshama when it comes to prayer. Now, when it comes to prayer, there are three parts. There's dibor, there's maisa, dibor, and machshava. Maisa is the action, means the bare, you know, most physical form of it. The actions involved. The dibor is the words, and the machshava is the thoughts. Right? Actions is connected to nefesh. That's the most physicalized part. Dibor, which is in between, it's the kind of dibor, speech is like a spiritual, physical act. It's like in between. Animals don't know how to speak, right? So it's a spiritual act that's used in the physical body. That's nefesh, that's ruach. I'm sorry, that's the ruach. And then the neshama is when it's completely spiritual. That's the machshava of the person. That's the thought process of the person. So we have nefesh, ruach, neshama, which parallels maisa, dibor, machshava. Then he says that this parallels the three parts of every word. Interesting. The three parts of every word. Every word has in it three parts. One is the letters. One is the nekudot, the vowels under the letters. And one is the ta'amim, is the trop, is meaning the way you put the letters together. The words, the way you put the words together, right? The trop tells you, you know, put these two words with this, this one goes there. It's the commas, the punctuation, right? The ta'amim. The trop is like the ta'amim, it's like the punctuation. It describes what, you know, the structure of the sentence. So Zoks Rochayim, Nefesh HaChayim from the Arizal, that the way you're Mekadesh, the letter, is with the Nefesh, which is with the Dibur, with the Maisa, with the Maisa. The way you're Mekadesh, the vowels, is with the Dibur, which is the Ruach, and the Kavana and the Taimim, the way you're Mekadesh is with Machshavah, what you're thinking, how you're putting the sentence together, right? What that means is like this. The physical letters themselves have Kedusha. And when a person says, you know, this word with these letters can accomplish something in Shemayim, I just have to say them properly, and this word now. But that's just very physical. It's the letters. It's physical on its own. But without Dibor, without describing what's going on, you don't really know what's going on. So if you have letters without vowels, it could mean a lot of different things, right? You could have chalav, which means milk, and chalav, which means fat. So you go into a restaurant, you ask for a milkshake, they're going to give you some fat from the chicken, and you give you schmaltz. That's not what you asked for, right? So the vowels is what is already giving, you know, the meaning, and then the timing is the bigger picture of like what it's coming to accomplish. So each one of these things is three parts of each word in tefillah, and we're supposed to be mekadesh every single part of the tefillah, all three parts of each word, and by using all three parts of our neshama in each word of tefillah. So it's pretty intense if you think about that. That means that you're supposed to, the word is supposed to carry itself to Shemayim and basically present your case. Say, look, whoa, this prayer was said, this prayer that Hashem sees now. Right.
If you pray with a certain kavanah, then and a
You're praying with a certain kavanah. That means you're putting the you're using your neshama part. You're already not using your guf part, which is what we said. Now that word with its full meaning and full punctuation comes in front of Bayer Olam, comes in front of Hashem, and it's presenting your case for you. You don't have to say anything more at that point. Now the word, so you know this is what he's saying. Obviously, I don't really fully understand, you know, the depth of it. I'm just saying the kind of the structure of what he's saying. And maybe tomorrow we could try to give a little bit more, meaning behind all this. But this is the structure. It's a fascinating concept, how each word, in order for it to have real meaning, is structured with a dual or a three parts to it. And our job is to provide that kedusha for all three parts. Okay, so we'll try to get a little bit more of an understanding of this tomorrow night. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Rabbi.
All right, everybody. Thank you for coming. We'll pick it up tomorrow.